have a reason and know why. Don't do it just so they'll die. If you're gonna kill a bug, don't do it just because. I like bugs, and I'll tell you why. They're alive, and so am I. Bugs. I like grasshoppers, cause frogs eat them. I like bees, cause flowers need them. I like spiders, I like slugs. I like caterpillars, I like bugs. I hate crowds, I love people. I ain't down with the plague, but I'm cool with beetles and bugs. Whoa, bugs pretty cute, bugs pretty fun. There's a couple of bugs I try to stay away from. Mosquitoes, ticks, business flies, bugs in suits, bugs in ties. And I get bit, and it makes me itch. Ain't never gonna hear me complain, cause bug bite never really kills me. I just get bit and I itch and I go on my way. Galler's bird. Alright, you made it. Tenacious dung beetles pushing their gains. Little water beetles riding a wave. Butterflies are beautiful and moths are mysterious. We study fruit flies for genetics if you want to talk serious. You know, by and large, bugs are okay. They're just doing bug things, going about their bug day, uh-huh. And I don't know what the mantis is praying for, but he probably just thanking the Lord that he don't live in a home, and he don't got a phone, and he don't sit around all angry and bored. He's just a bug. He's here for the bugs. Yeah. Buzz on.
Jesse Wells, and you're sitting there in Radio Land saying, Tom, why are you playing a song about bugs? Well, that's because the bug man's here, Jim Dill. You can't hear? Oh, yeah, you're on. Okay, let's do this. I've got to run over to the studio, so let me hit the... Jim is there. I'm going to hit the tune machine, and we'll get this sorted out.
Well, I told you once, and I told you twice, but you never listened.
Try it now. Just now?
And make sure you play it down.
Might hurt. Take them off your head. You hear the sound? Yeah, I think that would turn it up and down. Volume wise. Go.
All
right, let's try that again. How's that, Jim? You can't hear? Turn it up. No? Okay. All right. Let me bring the stones back up again. Hang on. How about that? Try it now. No? I guess not. All right, you sit tight.
Oh, no.
Okay, let's try that again. Jim, good morning.
Good morning.
Okay. Oh, there we go. You didn't get to hear the bug song. I'm sorry about that. Everything's in flux here. We're changing stuff around in the studio. So, Jim can hear me. Jim is from Cooperative Pest Management, University of Maine. And we're going to talk about bugs. And I don't know. Should we start with ticks?
Tick? What are ticks, anyway?
I've heard they're a nuisance insect. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe. What do you got for me?
Well, they're closely related, of course, to insects, but it's been a really bad or good, depending on which side of the coin you're on, tick year. Lots of them. right now, in the lab, we're running probably 3-1 on deer ticks to dog ticks. But dog ticks are really bad, and the reason why I think it's running more deer ticks than dog ticks is that basically people are starting to learn the difference between the different species. And therefore, since they know now what dog ticks look like, they're not as concerned about the dog tick, because the dog tick here in Maine does not transmit any disease organisms. And I say yet, because in other states they do. But here in Maine, we haven't found any disease organisms associated with the dog tick.
Well, that's good. We've been, I mean to interrupt. We've been dealing a lot with dog ticks at my location.
Right.
And my daughter's been freaked out. She's found them on her person and not been in the woods or anywhere. And they were actually crawling around the doorway to our shop.
Right.
Which is fascinating, because my understanding is they're usually on vegetation.
What you'll find with the dog tick, they're much tougher than the deer tick. The deer tick, as far as that is concerned, is kind of wimpy. And they're susceptible to drying out. So they have a tendency to stay in vegetation and, near the wood edge, that type of thing. The dog tick, on the other hand, they'll crawl out, find them in the middle of the yard or whatever. So everything we always say about ticks and that type of thing, you kind of have to throw out on the dog tick, because they are much hardier. And like you say, crawling up the lab where we are in Orono, you can go outside on the storage buildings outside. A lot of times we'll have, 10, 12 dog ticks crawling up the side of it.
That's depressing.
Yeah. So they, as I say, the only good thing you can say about them at the moment is that there's no disease organisms, as I said earlier, associated with them. But now you're not so free of the tick as we always said you were, just along those, spaces where it's dampish.
And so a deer tick, obviously, we're talking about a critter that's on deer or other wildlife part of the time. What about dog? Obviously, dog ticks are on dogs. I don't have any dogs around my shop, and we have a lot of dog ticks. What other critters do they travel on?
Well, that's kind of, in a way, a misnomer.
Mm-hmm.
It's also called the wood tick, is another name for the dog tick. And I think probably what happened was that when someone first described it was probably because they had dogs roaming around in the woods, and all of a sudden they were getting these ticks on them, quote, dog ticks, is what they started calling them. Just like we talk about moose ticks, and really the name of the moose tick is the winter tick, but it's just been associated with moose, so it's called the moose tick. And the same with the deer tick. Its official name is called the black-legged tick, but we refer to it as the deer tick. So there's really, it's nothing really to do with dogs. So if you want to look at it that way, I mean, raccoon, fox, woodchucks, that type of thing, anything will get, dog ticks on them, rabbits. Okay. But they also have their own specific ones. Here in Maine, there's rabbit ticks. There are woodchuck or groundhog ticks. Again, it's just something that seems to have been more associated with a particular animal when it was first described.
Okay. Well, I'll tell you what, we're going to take a quick break here, try to catch up. At least we got the technical end of things working. And I don't know. Maybe we'll just talk about ticks a little bit more.
Okay, sounds good.
We'll be right back. It's 8:18. It's hot and cold Saturday morning. We're here with Jim Dill from Cooperative Extension Pest Management, University of Maine in Orono. Jim is on every spring. It's still spring. We haven't made it to summer yet. And autumn, and we talk about bugs. And inevitably, the big topic of conversation, of course, is ticks. Jim, so how many varieties of ticks are we looking at in the state of Maine, roughly?
Somewhere around 15 different species, probably.
Okay.
Yep.
And I just saw a thing in the news the past week or two about tick balls, where they want to shoot insecticide-laden paintballs on moose. Is it moose balls? Not moose. Anyway, what's that all about?
Well, we've actually joked about that for years, actually, because we figured we'd have people lined up to, you know, have paintball guns.
Oh, that's true. It would be.
Have paintball guns that shoot insecticide balls.
Mm.
So you go out and you shoot the moose, and, you know, they're treated just like you treat your dog or your cat or whatever.
Yeah.
But there's several things, of course, wrong with the idea. Number one is the hundreds and hundreds of square miles where moose are, and to try to get every moose contact with a insecticide ball would be really, really tough.
Sure.
And getting close enough to them. Now, sometimes, yeah, you can get close to moose, but during certain times of the year, you don't want to be that close to a moose,
right,
or probably really shouldn't be that close to a moose anyway. So that's a concern also. Then the issue would become that now that's treated and it's a systemic, meaning it goes all throughout the system, if someone goes out and shoots that moose later on, is it going to have to be tested for the, you know, insecticide that it's been treated with before mm-hmm. you could eat it? So as nice as that sounds, it's kind of a hard thing to swallow, you know, to actually do. But as I said, it's been one of those things that's been floating around for years. The same with, you know, they said, let's just put it out in feeding blocks, you know, because like deer, they come and that's how they treat deer in some areas.
Mm-hmm.
Is you put out a feeding station, the deer come, and when they reach the head down, there's rollers on the side, and they roll their heads through the rollers and they get the insecticide on them. Mm. Well, moose don't feed like that.
Right.
So there's nothing you can really put out there to attract a moose to feed. So it's not been any good ideas that they've come up with on how to treat them. And this past year was a really, really bad winter tick year.
Mm-hmm.
Lots of dead calves because of the winter tick. And see, the winter tick is like we all talk about going out in the yard, and you know, you're walking around and you get a tick on you here and you get a tick on you there.
Hmm.
And you know, you might end up with a dozen ticks on you. But with the winter tick, when the tick falls off the moose, it lays its eggs, and when it hatches, instead of dispersing like the deer tick and the dog tick, all these little ticks crawl away, or a mouse will come by and they'll grab onto it, one or two will grab onto it and get a ride.
Mm.
With the winter tick, if a moose walks by and you got this clump of ticks here, one or two will grab onto the moose, and then all the others grab onto the other ticks. And all of a sudden you get this big long chain of ticks.
My.
And it's possible to get 100 ticks, 200 ticks, you know, and just brushing by one time.
Sure.
And we've had moose. We had one that actually this spring, That was brought into the lab from the wardens brought it in. It had dropped dead in someone's yard in Milo. And I couldn't even begin to tell you how many ticks were on there. Thousands and thousands. I mean, there's been estimates of up to 100,000 ticks on a moose at times.
Wow.
And of course, and these ticks, when you think of a dog tick or even a deer tick, how fat they get and how small they start out. Well, when you have a fully engorged winter tick, it's about the size of the end of your little finger. It's like grapes hanging off in the moose. You can see it from a distance.
Yeah.
And if you get, 10,000, 20,000, you name it on there, feeding, then there's a lot of blood taken off. And the life cycle is a little different because with the dog tick and the deer tick, when they feed on an animal and they get fully engorged, they drop off. When you start out as a little tiny larval tick, it will feed, let's say, on a mouse. And when it's fully engorged, it drops off, sits there, digests the blood, and it molts and turns into the next stage, which is a nymphal stage, looks for new hosts that come walking by.
Mm.
With the winter tick, like I said, you get this whole chain of hundreds of ticks at a time. They never leave the moose. They spend their entire life cycle on the moose, going from this tiny, tiny little tick to this full-grown tick. So they don't drop off. They just keep on feeding. And feeding, they'll pump blood through them. They excrete some of the blood.
Mm-hmm.
So you'll hear during the winter a lot of times, snowmobiles will come up and they'll say there's a moose laying side of the path or whatever. And when it gets up, there's all kinds of blood on the snow. That's because there's so many ticks that was feeding and pumping it through. So, of course, the moose gets anemic. And also the moose tries to rub those winter ticks off, and instead they rub the fur off. And then they die of exposure, especially in a winter like this. So it was a bad tick year, number one. And we had a relatively cold winter this time at times of what we've had recently. So the young moose, unfortunately, die of either anemia or exposure.
Mm. So we talk about black flies. They're in a ecological chain, if you will, for fish and the rest. What's the deal with ticks?
I get asked that all the time, and it's funny. I do the same thing. I say, well, black flies, they're good in the food chain, fish, other insects in the water, same with mosquitoes, but ticks, I can't find a good reason for them. In the food chain, there's nothing that, depends on them, for food. Nothing necessarily searches them out. Mm-hmm. You get all these folks saying, oh, turkeys and chickens and guinea fowl. Yes, if they come across a tick sitting there on a branch, they'll eat it just like they would if it was a grasshopper or any other insect. But they don't necessarily search them out and clean out an area. So there doesn't seem to be any good ecological niche for them that, like you just asked, in the food chain or whatever.
Nobody asked my personal opinion, but I will share it nonetheless. I think we should do the paintball thing. I mean, from a humane point of view, for the safety of any animals that can be treated.
Yep.
We don't rely on moose meat necessarily.
Nope.
And we can at least find out if it, in fact, it works or doesn't work.
Right.
I suspect that it's probably not. There's there must be insecticides that metabolize that would breed. Now, if you have a critter that's been infected with Lyme disease, if you cook it, you can eat it. Lyme disease is rendered inert because of what it is. That isn't necessarily the same as having a chemical in the system of the critter that you want to enjoy.
Right.
But I would, from my point of view, I would sacrifice the opportunity to have moose meat to ensure that the herd survives better and doesn't suffer the way. This has got to be a horrible existence for moose to have, tens, if not hundreds of thousands of ticks feeding on them.
Right.
And this has been something that's manifested in, what, the past 20, 30 years?
Right, yeah.
Because of some climate changes, and I guess the ticks may be just roaming around.
Right. Yeah, I mean, you could always shut down the moose season for a year or two also to try treating and, you know, get a handle on
true.
The ticks.
True,
if that was the case. I think a couple other issues, though, is one which I alluded to, is finding the moose and be able to treat them. Even though you're talking a paintball gun and people would say, I'll volunteer to go out and, yeah. and do it. But you'd get so few that way. I think it would be an awful, awful expensive proposition because you probably really would have to have people go up in helicopters and do it.
No. This is what we got to do. We got to get it's yeah. free. You get your free paintball guns, and you get to go out in the woods. You don't kill the critter.
No,
you just get
not.
To play.
Right. Yeah, and you actually put paint in it, so you know if
yeah,
you've already treated
yeah.
it. So.
And you know, I think that's a true sport, if
yeah,
you will.
Exactly.
But no,
and
I
getting
understand.
The right dosage would be a problem,
true,
probably too.
True.
So, but anyway, I mean. People have seriously talked about it for yeah. years, but how to get to the
right.
moose and
big,
with it.
Big state.
Yes, big state.
And the moose don't hang around waiting no, to get no. shot with a paintball.
No.
We come back. Well, I got a text message here. Let's just see. If they die from ticks, there will not be any moose to eat.
True.
True. And you know, years ago, when I lived in Searsport, there was a big moose that was it just marching around, and I actually pulled out of my driveway, and everybody was parked out on the road on Route 1 where I lived. And so I pulled over because everybody else stopped looking, and it was a moose, and you could see how covered this poor creature was.
Mm-hmm.
And it was not moving well.
No.
And it was a huge moose with a baby. And just stood there, and you think, oh, gosh, you know, what do? You can't do anything. It's nature, but it's a rough one. We come back. We'll discuss a little bit more. Maybe any possible things that could be in the offing, in terms of ticks, and also what possibly there is a Lyme disease vaccine we can talk about.
Right.
So we'll take care of that in just a little bit. It is hot and cold. It is Saturday morning. We'll be right back. We're back. It's 8:34. It's hot and cold Saturday morning. We're talking bugs with Jim Dill, Cooperative Pest Management, Cooperative Extension Pest Management. Let's get it right, Tom. And we're still on the subject of ticks. And yeah. we ain't escaping them that quick. So, Jim, where are we at in terms of, is anybody in the glorious state of Maine or in the Northeast or in the country for that matter, have any kind of mitigation plan to help combat ticks?
Well, we're actually working with a project with New Hampshire and Vermont. It was a tri-state project, and where we're testing the ticks, and New Hampshire's doing some of the ecology of the ticks, and Vermont was trying out different biological controls, looking mm-hmm. at bacteria, looking at fungi, viruses, botanicals, all that type of thing, to see if they can find anything that works. There's, you know, some things that show some promise, But so far, nothing as good as the synthetics that we use, the synthetic pyrethrins, bifenthrin, which is one of the ones that's being used. There was a formulation several years ago of rosemary oil that worked almost as well. And for some reason, it was taken off in the market. And when it came back, they had changed the formulation. And it doesn't work anywhere near as well. So I don't know if, quote, one of the inert ingredients was not actually inert, that it was, you know, some type of a synergistic effect. But whatever it was, they ended up taking it off the market. And so they're looking at all those different types of combinations, but haven't found anything yet that does the trick.
Well, at least there's people looking.
Well, yeah, we're looking, and
I will be optimistic that there will be a at least a solution to tamp it down a little bit.
Yeah, that would be nice. That would definitely be nice. So,
and what do you know about the Lyme vaccines?
It's being tested on humans. There are even here in the state of Maine. I understand there's folks that are in the trial that has had the vaccine, so it is to the people testing stage now. And I would guess that it probably, if it works, it'll be another 2 or 3 years maybe before it's available. But, you know, which is great, but that's only for Lyme disease. Right. And as you know, like in our lab, we test for 6 different organisms, and we test the deer tick or black-legged tick. And so it's great if you have a vaccine for Lyme, but you still got babesiosa and powassan and anaplasmosis. And so we've conquered one that, at least from a human standpoint, you won't get that particular disease, hopefully. But unfortunately, you know, some of the ticks that we test will have 3 different, you know, microorganisms in them. And, you know, a triple play would be pretty nasty if you got all 3 of them from that tick bite. So
this may be outside your area of expertise, or but it's worth asking. People eat, there's a lot of claims that something like garlic or some other food that people would eat keeps ticks from attaching. Is there anything that we can do? Eat more garlic?
The garlic farmers of the U.S. say yes, eat more garlic. We haven't seen anything like that. You know, certainly people will say if you eat garlic, it'll keep mosquitoes away, that you actually do smell the garlic, reek of garlic. And
I've been told that I reek of garlic when I've had it. And
so yeah, you know, but with ticks, their whole different system is, you know, they're more tactile. They're not flying around zeroing in on CO2 or heat or whatever. It's just that something brushes by, it grabs on.
You know, it's funny because where we've had the dog ticks kicking around our location, I try to stay on the pavement this time of year, where I know it's hot, and they're not going to, even dog ticks ain't going to get too far. But inevitably, I'll be home at night, and I'm watching TV, and I feel like itchy. And at some point, I will get up, and usually I drop my pantaloons, and there's a damn tick on my leg marching around.
Right.
And I could deal with a lot of stuff. Ticks just freak me out. I haven't had any attached in a very long time. And when they have, it's just when it's happened. And I have my Jim Dill Memorial tick spoon that are all over the house just in case. But I haven't had one attach in quite some time because usually I feel them.
Yeah.
Although, recently, this year, My wife found one crawling on the bedroom floor. It was apparently in my pants, and came off. Said, "Where'd Tom go?" But it's interesting to me that I will look a lot. My son Pete will treat his clothing with permethrin to keep them from getting on him, because he's had him. He's usually mowing the lawn and stuff at work, and I've treated with bifenthrin just to try to keep them away as much as possible.
Right.
But that's all we can do at this point, is just treat the site where you spend most of your time and be aware.
Right. Yeah, I think the big thing is be aware of what you're doing, what you do, and do a tick check. And I always say do two tick checks. When you come in, you know, if you know you've been in a tick area, take that clothing off. Best thing, throw right in the dryer and just do a dry run. And it will kill the ticks. And just do a tick check. Yeah. Then the next morning when you get up and taking your shower, do another tick check. Because if they've attached, you know, that's like 12 hours maybe.
Mm-hmm.
And now they're probably easier to see because they're maybe slightly engorged.
Mm-hmm.
But also, for the most part, you know, they haven't been on long enough to transmit, you know, the Lyme disease organism or one of the other organisms.
Yeah.
With the exception of the viruses, the Powassan viruses only takes, they say, a few minutes possibly. So,
thanks, Jim. Feel good now. Let's go on to the next one. I have promised my wife, we have a plague, it seems like a plague to her at least, of silverfish. Every morning I get the silverfish report.
Right.
And I thought it was because we had a damp basement.
Right.
And you're saying no.
No. Silverfish have a tendency to be more in drier areas. And we have two different things of the bristletail family is what silverfish are in.
Mm-hmm.
And there's silverfish and there's fire brats. They look fairly similar, but the silverfish is truly very silver and kind of shiny. And the fire brat looks very similar to it, but is more of a brownish on the back.
We have both.
You very well could.
Yeah.
The fire brat... its name comes from a tendency where they usually are. You'll find those like in older houses where there's a big old furnace or a furnace room.
Mm-hmm.
They like it really hot.
Mm-hmm.
Really warm, dry places is the fire brat. The silverfish usually is in a drier place too. But what silverfish love is they feed on cellulose. They feed on books, newspaper, paste that used to bind books, you know, older books, the bindings.
Yep.
That's the type of stuff that silverfish feed on. So a lot of times in older houses we find them, because if you open up a wall, sometimes there's newspaper in there. I don't know if they use it as insulation or...
I've been finding that. Matter of fact, you know what? I was in the basement last week and I looked... I happened to glance up and I saw a newspaper and I saw the date 1900.
There you go.
You know, it goes in between floors to cut drafts and stuff.
Right.
That's what they did.
Yeah. Right.
So the only thing I can do in my mind is treat it with permethrin
or
bifenthrin.
Yeah, you can treat it if they're that big of a nuisance. And as I say, it can be bad enough, like in libraries where there's an old book section that's not used a lot. It truly can damage the books and stuff.
Yeah.
So they are they're more than just a nuisance, is what I'm saying. So you do need to try to find out what they're feeding on, what they're doing, are they damaging anything. And if you have to treat, you can also use in some areas, like in wall voids or someplace we're seeing as diatomaceous earth.
Okay.
Because that's, you know, very lethal to the silverfish.
Oh, it's good to know.
Because it, you know, abrades the cuticle chitin, and they dry out. And it's not a hard pesticide, you know.
And it's a permanent thing. You can.
It's permanent. Yeah. As long as it stays dry,
it's
permanent.
Okay.
Yeah, and you can get squeeze bottles of it.
That's what I'm getting, man.
And you put it in the wall voids.
I've got little, well, there's spots where I haven't put up all the trim yet.
Yep.
and that seems to be where they are. The other thing my wife has is she's put the, I'd done a bunch of closets with red cedar, and I gave her, she wanted the scraps. So I've got little scraps of red cedar all around where she sees them.
Yep.
And she claims they don't come because of that. I'm not sure that's...
Well, cedar oil is a repellent. So it has been used, I mean, for years as repellent. I mean, you could buy blocks of it to hang in closets and stuff to keep clothes moths
away. That's why we did the closets. I knew it was an old house. I said, you know what? It's not that expensive given the alternative of having to deal with critters, you know, $100 a closet or whatever it is for lining it with red cedar. And it looks nice, and it smells good. And you had told me during the break, and I will share this with the audience, spiders eat silverfish.
Well, yeah, they'll eat anything they can find for an insect, absolutely. Especially the free-roaming spiders. You know, the wolf spiders and those type of things, the funnel web spiders. Those are the ones you often will see in the corner of your windowsill that zip out, and once you tap on the window, they zip back in.
Yep.
Those are kind of the free-roaming spiders, and they're looking for any type of insect. The ones that have a web, you know, you figure not so much because, you know, if it's up in the corner of the ceiling, a silverfish is probably not going to stumble into that web. Yeah. But the free-roaming spiders, yes, they will they'll eat silverfish and, you know, any other little insects that they come across. Mm. So, and the other thing that will eat tiny silverfish is pseudoscorpions. And I don't know if you've ever seen a pseudoscorpion.
Yes.
With the claws.
Lace bugs, is that what they're called too?
No, well, you know, they're just these super tiny, less than a quarter of an inch, and two big pinchers out there.
Yeah.
And they feed on very small insects. They'll feed on any type of small insects, spiders, baby silverfish, you know. So, yeah. And older houses will often have a bunch of those around just for the same reason, because there may be some, you know, small insects and stuff for them to feed on.
My goal, I'm dealing with a house with a dirt floor basement, which I think, to me, is a nice place for critters to want to be.
Yeah.
And a lot of folks, as they try to make these places more energy efficient and cleaner, are putting plastic down, foaming the walls. I foamed the walls, but I'm in the process, slowly but surely, of getting plastic down on the floors. First step was just to get all the crap out of the basement. There's so much debris. And also a lot of sawdust and rotted wood that just fell into the dirt over the years. So I'm kind of like gardening down in the basement, removing as much compost-type material before we put something down, just to try to minimize that. But hopefully that will not dissuade the spiders.
Well, as you well know, that type of a basement is great for carpenter ants and rodents. So.
Yeah, yeah. Well, the spray foam, if there were, there was no signs of rodents.
Really?
But the spray foam kind of sealed everything off. I don't know. It was this past week. I'll just share a hot and cold story real quick. As I was got spray foam everywhere, I wanted the basement tight. I'm putting in an outlet, right? And it was really hard to get location. I had to drill at an angle because there's a big sill, and I drilled through a wire.
Ooh.
And I'll save the rest of the story for next week, which is the hook for you to come back next week and hear what I did. And I didn't get electrocuted, but hilarity ensued. And what I thought was going to be a leisurely evening of, hey, I got that hole drilled. Pooh, I'm done for tonight. No. But, you know, the other thing about silverfish, and then we'll let that one go because we'll be at the top of the hour anyway, is I'm stripping off siding on the outside of the house. And I removed, there was tar paper and some foil. And as I removed that, I'm looking at the old wood sheathing. There's silverfish all over the place.
Yeah.
And of course, it's dry underneath there. It wasn't wet, but it's fascinating because we dealt with a whole other set of critters in the other house we were in. But very few Japanese lady beetles, which thank you, God, for that.
Right.
Not a lot of cluster flies. We have about 30 windows to replace. We've done about half. And I haven't dealt with much, by the way, of cluster flies. And a lot of these windows weren't very tight. I was kind of amazed that they didn't find their way in what was an old drafty house.
Right.
Which is, you know, to be anticipated, I think, in any place in the state of Maine.
Well, all the spiders you have were eating the cluster flies. and the giant spiders you had in the basement ate all the rodents. So there you go.
That's what it is. Oh, my God. But, I've been kind of impressed. I haven't seen mice. I'm not saying they're not there, but I haven't seen them. I haven't seen the droppings. And we had recently had a car come in that we sold 3 months ago. Everything was fine. It was a real newer car. It was a Prius. And the guy had a battery issue. And he just had it 3 months. So, yeah, bring it back, please. Your warranty is up, but no, we'll take care of it. And I anticipated... I scanned it, and from what I could see, I said, I have a feeling you got mice. Huh. And I took the covers off, and lo and behold, there's a mouse nest on one end of the battery. I take the cover off the battery, and there is a little bit of mouse droppings and wetness, and that was the issue. The urine caused a ground fault. Car was fine. I cleaned it, and it went, here's the kicker. That was on a Wednesday I did this. Thursday, he wants to go to his college reunion at Princeton, in Princeton, New Jersey. And I said, look, I'm everything's fine. I've tested your car. I'm not sure I would drive it to New Jersey the next day.
Right.
I got a call on Monday. Everything was fine.
Okay.
So, yeah. But that's a big deal for us, or anybody that has a car in the state of Maine, not just us,
right.
is mice get in everywhere.
Especially if it sits for any amount of time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I don't have any good solution. I do have one good solution, and it's not a good solution, but that is mothballs.
Yeah.
They just work so well, except you don't want to be in the car with
right, exactly.
Neither do the
works
mice.
Well for keeping you out, too.
Yeah,
so.
and you know, the mice are smart, maybe smarter than us, certainly.
Right.
But it's been it's an ongoing challenge for anybody. And you don't have to be in a rural part of the state.
No.
You could be in town in Bangor, Maine.
Right.
Downtown Bangor, and you're going to have mice getting in the car if
right.
it's sitting
absolutely.
There.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. We're going to take a break. When we come back. I haven't looked to see if we have any messages. We got a couple here. Let's see. We got a minute or so. Let's do this one. When I was growing up, we burned all the fields every spring. Maybe that would help irradiate a lot of, or I think that means eliminate a lot of them. That's a typo. Burning fields would certainly knock them down. It would knock down a lot of stuff, I would think. But
well, on ticks, it may, especially the dog tick, because as we've already said, they have a tendency to be out more.
Yeah.
The deer tick, probably not so much, because they're still at that, right at the edge of the woods. So,
okay.
But certainly on dog ticks, it would help.
Yeah. Another one, my experience, putting clothes in the dryer does not work. I've seen dozens of ticks escape. The inside of the dryer crawling on the outside of the dryer. You got hardy ticks. My wife would not let me put my end of the day clothes into the dryer.
Right.
They're not fit to be in her dryer, and I agree with that.
Right.
Last one here, we got to take our break. My neighbor had mice eat mothballs in his boat.
Oh, wow.
Mothballs, not just for breakfast anymore. All right, we got Jim Dill for another hour. We're going to talk. We're going to talk bloodsuckers next hour, Jim.
We got all more kinds of things.
That'd be more bloodsuckers, wouldn't it? We were already talking bloodsuckers.
We
still got more.
Right, we do.
Oh, man, what a great time to be alive. All right, it's hot and cold Saturday morning. Stay with us. We'll be back. We'll be right back.
Second time around, you bring in a harmony, which is this note here. So you get.
All right, we're back. It is 9:05. It is Hot and Cold Hour number 2. We got Jim Dill from Cooperative Extension Pest Management in Orono at the University of Maine with us. And before we get started, talking about bloodsuckers, Jim. I got a bloodsucker question right here. Tom and Jim, with all the ticks and bloodsuckers out there, has there been any studies on eating moose, deer, bear, etc. meat? Thousands of ticks on a moose can't be healthy for anyone.
Yeah, I the only thing that it has been looked at, they have certainly looked at testing deer. They did a lot of testing of deer probably 6 or 7 years ago, looking for Lyme disease with all the ticks, especially in the southern part of the state. And a lot of the deer had antibodies to Lyme, so they had at some point been exposed to the Lyme disease organism. But cooking the meat does not, appear to cause any harm to the people, that it destroys any of the Lyme organism, so that it's very safe to eat. And when it comes to moose, if you've shot a moose that certainly has a lot of ticks on it, and during the hunting season, when you're shooting the moose, which is September through the end of October pretty much, they're just starting to pick up the ticks. So at that point in time, the ticks are very tiny, and they haven't caused a lot of damage to the moose. It's during the winter when you get those tens of thousands of the large ticks that the moose get anemic. And it doesn't do anything. I mean, yeah, the taste might be off or something. I really don't know. I'm sure there's studies on it. But again, when we would be hunting the moose for the most part, there's not a lot of anemia at that time to the moose. So the meat appears to be certainly fine from what tests I have seen.
So another bloodsucker question. I think Florida and California are talking. Google is wanting to do an experiment releasing sterilized mosquitoes to try to control the mosquito population. Have you followed any of that or seen anything on it?
That's an interesting one to talk about, because this week, as you probably may have seen in the news, we had our first case in years of screwworm in the southern U.S.
Yeah.
And screwworm is a type of fly, looks about like a house fly, and they're attracted to any type of a wound on any animal, from, cattle to horses to humans and all wildlife. So you can imagine, it's pretty easy to find something out there that's got a wound on it.
Sure.
And they're attracted to that, the blood, and they lay their eggs there. And then when the larvae hatch, they tunnel into the flesh. And certainly in cattle, if you get enough of them into a beef cattle, it ruins the meat. So years ago, they came up with this eradication program, which was irradiating, millions of male flies, rendering them sterile, and then they released them over the area. And they mated, and they ended up eradicating the problem. Now, the interesting thing is here that the female screwworm fly is not promiscuous. She mates once. So if she mates with a sterile male, she figures everything's happy and goes lays sterile eggs. Mm. Mosquitoes, maybe not so much. They may mate with more than one male.
Okay.
So, you know, if you flooded the area, what does that mean? How many sterile males are there? How many non-sterile males are there? And still, is she going to come in contact with, two, three males, one of which might be non-sterile, fertile?
Okay.
So it may not work as well.
So the mosquitoes don't mate just one time?
Right, not necessarily, right.
Okay, they have a long enough life cycle that...
Yeah,
okay.
That they may mate more than once.
Okay, wonderful. All right, so the another big one coming up, hot dog, another bloodsucker, bed bugs.
Yes. Interestingly, certainly, Tom, we've been doing this for years. I couldn't even tell you how many years we've been doing this. And must have been 10, 12 years ago, there was a real surge in bed bugs. And that's all we talked. Actually, that's more what we talked about on the show than ticks.
We didn't talk about ticks, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, now it's flipped completely around. Mm. And so we talked the whole show about bed bugs. And about the time COVID hit, a little after, you know, the bed bug situation pretty well tempered, and I would get one or two, three specimens in the lab a year. Mm. I would say in the last month, I've probably had 10 bed bug samples set in. So the question becomes, I mean, is that just happenstance that, people, uh-oh, what is this? Or are we starting to get a surge again in bed bugs and the like? And certainly, I'm not saying we are, but just from, a curiosity standpoint in the lab of things coming in, it's noticeable that there's been an uptick in the bed bug numbers being sent in. And so it always gives me a cause of concern that, are we going to be back where we were 10 or 12 years ago and lots of bed bugs. The problem with the bed bugs is that they're very difficult to control once you get them in your home, very expensive to control. Mm. And the good thing, if there is a good thing about bed bugs, they have no diseases associated with them. So even though they're creepy, crawly, blood-sucking insects, they don't transmit any disease organisms. So I guess that's a good thing. And the other thing is, as I've mentioned on the show before, we had a exchange student living with one of the entomologists that worked in the lab from, I can't remember if she was from Mexico or somewhere in South America. But anyway, the bottom line was she couldn't understand why we got so upset about, a bed bug, because in some other countries, it's a fact of life, like mosquitoes and stuff are here. Mm. They're just around. I mean, it's not huge numbers. It's not like the houses have hundreds of bed bugs in them, but most houses have a bed bug or two, and they kill them and off they go. So they didn't see it the same way that we viewed the bed bug epidemic.
Yeah.
So they were more endemic, I guess, in some other countries. And as we've also said before, that, that's part of the problem with how we get them. You can jump on a plane and be anywhere in the world in a few hours and back home in a few hours. So it's pretty easy to bring something like that back from some place you may have stayed in your luggage, and you open it up and crawls under your bed and away you go.
Yep. There you go. got a text message here. Bombing bed bugs won't kill them. Never had them. So if you get bed bugs, what do you do?
Well, what you have to do is you can try to control them yourself, but it's very, very difficult. That's why I say it can be very expensive. Mm-hmm. And there's most professionals, for a while, one of the big things were they had bed bug sniffing dogs, just like they have bomb sniffing dogs.
Sure.
They were very popular. There's still a few of them around in the state, but there used to be lots of them. And once you've got them, to control them, you usually have to use a combination. Like I would say, since this is what I do, integrated pest management, you probably got to use heat, monitoring, and some type of an insecticide. Mm. And heating is one of the big things they used for a while. You have to heat everything up to at least 122 degrees. So that makes it kind of tough.
Sure.
In a home, to get all places in there 122 degrees above, and usually they had these big heaters, and they usually got the rooms up to about 134, 135 degrees, and then they do what they call tossing. You know, they'd flip over furniture, they'd pull the cushions out, they'd flip everything around, they'd pull drawers out.
Yeah.
If you had clothing in it, you had to mess it all up because every place had to get to 122 degrees. And you also had to be careful of, like, you know, vinyl records. If you had a records, you know, they could all of a sudden be warped, or a candle instead of straight up would be, you know, tilted. Blinds, Venetian type blinds would sag.
Yeah.
So heat was things you had to look at, but heat was one of the things they used. But then they use it in combination with insecticides, and like we talked about in silverfish, diatomaceous earth was one that they used too. Okay. And you put it in the cracks and crevices.
All right, we're going to take a quick break. It is 9:16. It is hot and cold. We'll be right back with Jim Dill. Back to 9:21. It's hot and cold Saturday morning, and Jim Dill's with us. Put your headphones on, Jim. There you go. You hear me okay?
Yep.
Okay. And Judy's crying because she's got bed bugs. So, Jim, I know I've asked you this question over the years, but I think it bears repeating. In terms of floor covering, I've always felt that carpeting was just a great place for critters. Is that a valid concern of mine, or am I just really paranoid?
Partially depends on what the material is and the deepness of it. You know, the old lush wool pile carpeting was a great place for domestics. Because, carpet beetles, hence the name carpet beetles, they feed on organic materials.
Yeah.
So if you had a nice, lush wool carpet, you could have domestic problems. I was called in several years ago to a small museum, and they were having a domestic problem. And, you know, and of course in a museum, that's the last thing you want with all the displays of everything organic you can think of in there. But they actually had a wool carpet, and that was what their big problem was, because they would dust regularly and try to control the domestics, but they were still getting them and they couldn't figure out why. And that was the reason. So your point is well taken, depending on what the situation is. I think now, of course, a lot of the carpeting is much finer, and it's probably synthetic. So from that standpoint, you know, I don't think it's going to harbor much in the way of insects. You know, I don't think bed bugs are going to hide in the carpet. They usually like to go to cracks and crevices. Mm-hmm. They only feed like once a week, so they want to go in some place where it's protected to spend their time.
And so let's get away from bloodsuckers for a while.
Yeah.
And talk a little bit about ants.
Yep.
Fire ants, is that an issue here in Maine?
We have an insect called the European red ant, mm-hmm. which is closely related to fire ants, but it's not like the fire ants we have in the south. So they do bite and cause some irritation, but nothing like the actual fire ants do. Mm-hmm. And the fire ants down in the south actually bite, and then they actually sting or release formic acid from the tip of their abdomen, and that's what causes the burning, and hence the name fire is from that. So, and it's not the same up here with the ants that we have, but certainly have plenty of other ants crawling around us. We've talked many, many times here as carpenter ants, so.
Right.
We haven't had a lot of ants sent in yet this spring, so I don't know why. Of course, the season's really just starting to get going. We're kind of late this year. It was kind of cold.
Yeah. Tell me about it.
Yeah. So so the insects haven't been arriving as fast as they usually do. So, yeah. But speaking of that, though, the other day I did see my first brown-tailed moth caterpillar.
Oh.
And interestingly with that is probably many of you know and probably many of you came in contact with is, you know, the caterpillars were everywhere the last few years. And they were spreading and spreading and spreading. And now it's been pretty well contained. It's backed up. They're still in a wide area, but they're more pocketed, just a few. The last couple of springs have been fairly wet and cold, and this one was wet and cold, and that gives chances of viruses and that type of thing to take hold. And so it appears that they have done their job and really knocked back the numbers of brown-tailed moth caterpillars.
Well, I would assume in a population like that, you get a boom and bust cycle.
Right. Exactly.
It gets to a threshold, and then they just can't support itself, and it knocks back.
And that's what exactly has happened. Yeah. So,
how about emerald ash borer?
Emerald ash borer is still spreading. It's not a lot we can do about it. Every time I get a newsletter from the Department of Agriculture, DACF, Conservation and Forestry, it seems like there's a new, you know, finding someplace. So it is spreading. It's going to devastate ashes here in the state of Maine, and there's just not a lot that can be done about it except trying to stay ahead of them. But if you've got ash and they're valuable as timber, you need to think about cutting them and getting the value out of them before the...
There's no treatment for standing trees.
Not really. I've talked to folks about, they have injection methods. Mm-hmm. You know, they actually have injectors that you can put in into trees, but they haven't been doing it with the ash, and I don't know why.
But, I've got some big ash trees on my new property, and I'm looking at them. I'm thinking, well, first of all, one I'm thinking of, which is, and they're just beautiful trees. I mean, when they get mature, they are gorgeous, straight trees. This has got some really nice saw logs in it that I just look at, and I hate to see the tree come down, but it's in particular is one that's going to have to come down, ash borer or not. But you hate to do it because they're so beautiful. And of course, if you have some mature trees in your property of any species, they tend to reproduce on the property.
Yep.
So, and I have multiples around, so... you know, it begs the question, I'm looking at the garden. We have a garden adjacent to a porch, and there's a little sprout. It's about 4 feet tall. Thinking, do I want to transplant that, or I just want to lose it, you know?
Yeah.
Now, while it doesn't have a lot of connection with me in a couple of years, it's going to be a whole different story.
And that's something to look into. I really haven't looked into if they're trying to save the ash that way. My guess is that probably the situation was there's so many ash around. It might be something that would be difficult to do, but certainly on a one-to-one basis like you got, it's probably something you could do.
I think in an urban forestry scenario, in town in Bangor or at the park or something, if the trees can be treated, they probably should be or would be.
And they might be able to. I just haven't looked into that.
I haven't either, but that's one that...
So, yeah, that was the other one I was going to mention when I talked about brown-tail moths. So, but it's expanding all over the state, unfortunately. So it's in Penobscot County.
And is it your perception that the brown-tail moth, is that an indigenous pest, or did that come from overseas?
That came from overseas also. Mm. It started down on the Cape Cod area.
Mm-hmm.
And it was pretty much isolated there for a long time, long time. It expanded into southern Maine and then kind of went back. And then all of a sudden, you know, 10 years ago, about the same time the bed bugs were rearing its ugly head, brown-tail moths were expanding up the coast.
Yeah.
And then now inland, so... But now it's being beat back, like you said, kind of boom and bust.
And as long as we're talking about forestry, spruce budworm, is that ever, coming back at all, or what are we seeing going on there?
Yeah, it's coming back. They sprayed 100,000 acres maybe last year. They had a, I think it was a $12 million spray program up in northwestern Maine, probably. Mm-hmm. Because it's up in Quebec, and they've been fighting it for a while. And, and so they did it last year, and I think they're doing it or did it again this year. So
what are they treating with?
I think they're actually using BT, which is a bacteria, Bacillus.
It's very effective for that.
So.
All right. Well, I'll tell you what. Let's take another break. It's 9:30. A good time to stop and catch our catch our breath and not choke here, Tom. And we'll be right back. Stay with us.
Tell me that you got everything you want, and your bird can sing, but you don't get me. You don't get me. You say you've seen seven wonders, and your bird is green, but you can't see.
All right, we're back. It's 9:35. It's hot and cold Saturday morning. Jim Dill from Cooperative Extension Pest Management is with us this morning, and we are chatting about bugs, pests, and the like. We got a bunch of text messages here, Jim. I've seen a lot of bugs either crawling on my south-facing window or crawling on the door. They look black at first, but if you look at them closer, their backs are a dark blue sparkled look. Body is quite rectangular, about a half inch long, maybe 3/16 of an inch wide. What kind of bug might that be? Are they a concern? Go ahead, Jim. What is it?
Well, the description is kind of tough, but it must be one of the ones that comes in to hibernate. So it could be one of the ladybugs, but it doesn't really sound that way.
Sounds like some kind of beetle. No?
Yeah, well, that's what I'm saying. You know, ladybird beetles.
Okay, yeah.
But I from the description, a kind of metallic blue doesn't really ring a bell, but they can always take a picture of it and send it to us. We, you know, we usually can identify things from pictures.
Right. I send Jim pictures all the time, and I get a pretty prompt response, and he's always right. You can look up, just Google Cooperative Extension Pest Management Orono, Maine, and you'll get the email info, and you can take care of that, and they'll help you right out. Another one, does your guest know how to get Asian lady beetles not to be attracted to my home. I know how to kill them, but then more come. Sometimes so many I've had to shovel them out. I have too. I've dealt with that.
Change the color of the outside of your house.
Yeah.
It would be one thing.
Yeah, definitely.
The other thing is, in all seriousness, you really got to, and Tom, you've talked about this hundreds of times, you got to get those cracks and crevices sealed.
Yeah.
That's what they come in.
But if there, my experience was that the property where I had this particular house that had the issue had a lot of alders around it.
Mm-hmm.
And we had aphids on the alders.
Absolutely.
Which the lady beetles loved. And there was one day, and always it was around Columbus Day when they're kind of at their peak. I came home from work for something. And I turned around and left. I did not want to open the door to the house. There were so many on that. As a matter of fact, I went and got some kind of permethrin and sprayed the house.
Right.
Just so I could knock them down enough to get in. And when I did an addition years later, in between the clapboards, you know, the overlap, there were so many dead Asian lady beetles. It was incredible.
Yep.
So, and it was the original problem was the color. And I have a lot of people say that. We changed the color of the house. We went from, well, we probably didn't change it the right way, but it was better. It was originally yellow.
Yep.
And oh my God, they just love yellow. If you have a yellow house, you're in trouble. Get the paint. It's not too late. but we changed it to a beige.
Yep.
And it's kind of not too far off from yellow. It's still a light color, and they were still around, but they were not as intensely attracted.
Right. Yellow is one of those colors that we use for a lot of our insect traps in greenhouses, in our field studies and stuff. Yellow really attracts insects.
That's
so
good to know. That's good to know.
So that's one color, you know, it truly, truly would help if you didn't have that. So
yeah.
I got a
message. They say the ash doesn't show signs of infection until it's too late.
Yeah, and that's part of the problem with them. So that's why if you've got them, you know, if you can inject them, and as I say, I haven't looked into injection, but they do inject trees for other diseases and insect control. So my guess is it should work on emerald ash borer,
mm-hmm.
but all you got to do is contact a local arborist and discuss it with them.
Yep.
And if you've got some ash trees you really want, like you said, Tom, is urban forestry, contact a local arborist and have him or her come and check it out. And,
you know, we have an advertiser on the station, McIntosh.
Yep.
He's a local guy, and but there's a ton of really good arborists in the area.
Yeah.
So, got another message here. Every Marine knows the wrath of fire ants and sand fleas. I'm sure they do. And thank you for tolerating that. We appreciate it. Sorry you had to deal with it. Trails of little tiny black ants. I guess that's a question.
Yeah. Well, there's two or three species that we have. If we're talking tiny, they're probably like a pavement ant, a pharaoh ant, a crazy ant.
Crazy ant? Yeah. That was the one I...
Yeah. And they're very tiny. Crazy ants get their name from, they run around in circles. So, you know, they're kind of like, you know, looks like they're on something. Or, you know,
that's
they're really, really rushing all around, and they're very, very tiny.
Yeah.
And they do get in the house, but those are the typical ones that you find inside a house, but there are several species that will get inside of a house. So.
And if you're dealing with those, borate ant traps,
right. Yep.
Put those out. They're benign. I've had folks who, and myself included, who got Boratim or Boraxo, a laundry detergent, sprinkle around the outside perimeter of your building. excuse me, I kind of like the laundry detergent because it's granulated and it breaks down slower than the borate insecticide, which I used to get because we used to treat foam with it, and you can mix it with water. excuse me, was a dust, really, and probably would wash away pretty quickly, whereas if you sprinkle detergent around your house, it hangs around for a little while.
It does, yeah. And it cleans your house. So,
that's right. So the person with the with the Lady Beatles. Yellow, question mark, my house is cedar shingles, clear stain. Aha. Maybe it's time to paint them black.
Yeah, right. It's interesting, but yeah. It's usually the south-facing side of the place. But it could be like you said, Tom, too, if around there she's got a lot of aphids, the color of the house really doesn't matter.
Yep.
But there are colors that are more attractive.
Right.
But if you've just got a good population of beetles around, in their native habitat in Asia, they overwinter on the sides of cliffs.
Mm-hmm.
So oftentimes we'll get problems with kind of grayish colored houses too.
Mm-hmm.
But yellow just really, like we've said, really attracts insects. Mm. So,
yeah.
But it's also with cedar shingles like that, it's sort of like the situation you talked about. It's probably just a great place for them to get up under the shingles.
Yeah. Yeah. You got enough.
You got enough space there anyway, so even though the cracks and crevices.
Yeah, and the siding that I had, it was hardy plank, which is that cement siding, and there's a good gap in between the back side of the and back and front side of the two overlapping pieces of siding, so they could get right up in there, and shingles would be the same way. As you said, Jim, if you have a lot of alders around your property, might be a good time to go in the alder cane business, cut them down and do something with them, because as a matter of fact, I've got to check. The people we sold the property to, I think, cut down a lot of the alders. I had taken some down, not for any particular reason other than for the view, but I know a lot more have gone away.
Mm-hmm.
And now you got my curiosity going if they're having an issue with them. And I'll have to check with them and see.
Right. Yeah, because they are there because it's a good food source. And then when it's time to overwinter, if you've got a house sitting right there, you know.
Yeah. Come on in.
Come on in.
Yeah, you got no choice. Let's see. Tom, could you text me the phone number of your car dealership? I will do that. All right. What else we want to talk about, Jim? We got about 15 minutes.
Well, we started on the Asian lady beetle. And I always like to mention them, cluster flies, and, of course, western conifer seed bug. Those are the three big ones that want to come in, and usually we talk about them in the fall.
Yeah.
But this is the time we talk about them because now they've been coming out, and people have them inside their house. And like the person who said, you know, I sweep them up by the bucketfuls or shovel them out, some houses can get an awful lot of those type of things in there.
Yeah.
The lady beetle, as we talked about, is associated with aphids. Cluster flies are associated with a good lawn area because the cluster fly larvae are parasitic on earthworms.
Mm-hmm.
So if you have a nice big grassy area, you will often have cluster fly problems too associated with that because you got a lot of nice worms out there in your lawn and they're parasitic. And when they come out, again, same thing in the fall, they're looking for a place to spend the winter. And the other one is the western conifer seed bug, and people really get freaked out about them. Usually you don't have hundreds of them. You might only have 10 or 50 or no more than that. But they're about almost an inch long, and those are those real slow-moving ones climbing up your, you know, almost looks like a spider in a way. The legs are kind of gangly and moving.
They look scary.
They look scary. Yeah. And they're closely related to stink bugs, which also will come in the house. And the conifer seed bug, if disturbed, will release a liquid that kind of smelly, too. I think it almost smells like pears. You know, whereas the stink bug, it's a little more pungent.
Mm-hmm.
And they're associated with pines. So if you have a lot of pines around your house, or if you only have just one big one even, you can get western conifer seed bug because that's what they feed on is the seeds of pine especially.
Mm-hmm.
So if you have a pine or two around the house, you know, and you get a lot of pine cones, you're going to have western conifer seed bug around coming in. Same thing. You can. The only thing you can do is, you know, try to seal up your cracks and crevices and to keep them out.
I was just thinking, this is these insects that get into the building are kind of like a really cheap, free energy audit. If you've got that amount of insects in your house, you know you've got cracks that you need to seal, because you're spending, in addition to dealing with bugs, you're spending a fair bit of money to let energy leak out of those cracks. Mm-hmm. And I haven't, you know, it's funny because I'm dealing with, I mentioned the first hour, an old house with a lot of holes in it, but I haven't seen a lot of that kind of action. And I'm kind of actually kind of amazed. I guess it's a, I guess I'll take my blessings where I can take them. We still got the silverfish, but that's they upset my wife more than me. I find them entertaining because they move so fast.
Oh yeah.
And I do have a lot. She keeps saying, you know, you have a lot of bucks. yeah, I do. They're gonna get in your books. Well, I'll deal with it if it happens. But maybe on the second floor of the house. Well, no, if they enjoy dry locations, I would think Right. Second floor would be drier than the first floor.
Maybe.
And if I'm running a heat pump in the basement to dry the basement, I'm not helping myself, am I? Oh man, maybe I should put a lagoon down there.
There you go.
Grow a lobster or something.
Right, exactly. Wow. And I think the only other thing that we haven't really touched on this time, even though it's not an insect, we usually get into rodent discussions.
Yes.
And again, you know, they we get a lot of calls. Tom, you've already mentioned one situation is cars. Yep. And if you have a car that sits any amount of time, you're probably going to have somebody move in with you.
Yeah.
And it, sometimes it doesn't even have to sit very long, and you know they find it and
the car that I just dealt with a couple weeks ago, I sold the car 3 months ago. Customer lives in a rural part of the area, and I know he's out and about every day.
Every day, yeah.
And still had, it wasn't a huge nest. I've seen, you know, some pretty massive nests, but it was it was enough. And no sign of the critter.
Yeah.
You look at the, you know, if you look at a car and you're trying to figure out how are they getting in, there's not a tremendous number of holes, but usually they go in through the fresh air inlet.
Yeah.
And I've seen some cars where somebody's taken hardware cloth or screen and taken the cowling, which is the part where the windshield wipers are, off and put the screen on, trying to keep them out of the car.
Yep.
But once they get into there, they have free reign of the car.
Yep.
They can go anywhere.
And certainly, even though we say, you know, if it sits a while, but they're out exploring, and you park the car, probably most likely most people do in the same spot every day. Yep. So it's there a good amount of time, especially probably at night when the mice are roaming around more. Yep. And they find it, and they're happy. I mean, they might go for a ride with you every day, but...
I've had it happen.
Yeah.
And the other thing is, and we can't emphasize this enough, don't leave food in your car.
Yeah, yeah.
Please, for any number of reasons, not the least of which is the critters are going to sniff it out.
Yep.
They're really good at that. And likewise in the house, you know, how food should be secured best you can, just to keep them from trying to come in.
Right.
But again, when I got into where I am, I take comfort now in the fact that everything's been spray foamed. Doesn't mean they can't chew through it, but I'll see the activity, what is a light-colored, smooth surface in the whole basement. So if somebody did try to breach my containment shield, I can I'll know and can deal with it accordingly.
Right.
I'd be dealing with that with soffits, because I do have holes in soffits, and those are going to get covered with metal.
Right. Yeah. Well, speaking of mice, I had a person just call me recently. their bottom desk drawer in their office, which they hardly ever opened.
Mm-hmm.
And they said when they open it, they'd only open it about halfway, because I think it had some files in it, you know, because it's that big one.
Yeah, yeah.
And so they would always just open a little bit, get the files, close it back up. And they said for some reason, just recently, they had opened it, and back in the back corner, a mouse had been living. But the funny thing about it was full of Hershey Kisses wrappers. They said there must have been about 20 of them there. And they said, you know, they weren't 100% sure. I mean, yeah, like at Christmas time and stuff, they have them.
Yeah.
And they had a jar on their desk, so people would come in and, you know, sit there and chat, and they'd take one. So evidently at night, there was a little mouse that must have run up there.
Oh, my goodness.
Would grab a Hershey Kiss. I would love to have seen this mouse carrying a Hershey Kiss back, climbing into the drawer, sitting there, unwrapping it.
And pigging out. I mean, when
pigging out on a
when you figure the size of the mouse compared to the Hershey's Kiss, that's like 3 gallons of ice cream or something like that.
Yeah. Must have been, probably had to give up because it was this big around, you know. So
it wasn't getting in the drawer anymore, so it's gone.
It's gone, right.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah. That's a hoot.
Yeah, it was.
Yeah. Wow. So, you guys have an online presence.
Yes. Yes.
And, again, just Google Cooperative Extension Pest Management.
Pest Management. We have a tick website. We have an insect website. And with pictures and all kinds of information, and you know, certainly with the tick one, it's all kinds of resources and talks about how to do tick checks and other things to avoid ticks the best you can. And then on our insect one, there's a whole photo collection to help you identify insects, how to submit samples to us, how to submit pictures to us.
Yep. So and folks can send you tick samples if there was a tick that's attached on you.
Yeah,
they can send you the tick, and you can see what if it contained anything bad.
Right. What we do is there's two things you can do. If you just want it identified, you send it in, and we'll identify it. If you want it examined for organisms, it's a $20 fee.
Mm-hmm.
And speaking of that, interestingly, this past month. 2 weeks in a row, we had people send us ticks. One had been in Ireland, and the other one had been in Scotland. And they both got a tick on them over there, and they didn't find it until they got back.
Mm.
And so they sent it in to us, and it was a sheep tick is what it was called. And it's closely related to the black-legged or the deer tick, same genus, different species. And the problem is we tested both of them, but even though they have Lyme disease and that type of thing over there, it's a different strain than what we have here. So our detection methods doesn't really detect the strain that they have in Scotland and Ireland. So we just told them to certainly contact their doctor, as we always tell people. And deal with that.
Yeah.
And I think probably in both cases, it's usually the doctor would say, well, if symptoms occur, then get back to me and then we'll deal with it. So.
Yeah. I didn't know they had them over there. That's depressing.
Yep.
I got one more here and we're going to have to go. Any new ideas on how to get rid of woodpeckers?
I bet you that's the same person that asks that question every time. I think
it could be.
we get that, and really no. I mean, I used to have the folks across the street had a big cupola or whatever it's called on the top of their roof, and every morning would be a woodpecker pecking on the side of that metal and would wake everybody in the neighborhood up. And why, I don't know.
Oh, gosh.
Usually woodpeckers are working on dying trees because there's insects in them. And that's what they're pecking for.
Yeah.
So the only thing I can say is, you know, check your trees and make sure they're all healthy. If you've got a dying tree, the best thing to do is, as you said, call the arborist and local arborist and have it taken care of. Yep. Otherwise, I don't really have a good solution for woodpeckers.
Okay, and we are out of time.
And we're out of
Jim,
time.
Thank you for taking the time to talk to us.
Anytime.
See you in the autumn.
Yep. Thanks, Tom.
Have a good week, everybody.
Yep, bye. When the sun doesn't shine, but there's that pocket full of miracles, and with a pocket full of miracles, the world's a bright and shiny apple that's mine.